everybody. Welcome back to E3 2018. I'm still here. I'm Ben Hansen, joined by Ben Reeves.
Hello.
Too busy to even look me in the eye, Ben Reeves.
I'm sorry. I'm He's tweeting. VIP right now.
Fantastic. Yeah. And Imran Khan.
I also never left.
News editor from Game Informer. And from Game Informer Australia, the exotic lands, the faraway lands of Forza Horizon 3 and all your other favorites, David Milner.
Hello, Ben. How you doing?
Real good. We only get to see you once a year. Why don't you ever come to Minnesota, man?
It's cold.
Yeah, look. Yeah.
Not right now. It's good. You'd love it. Just like Australia. All right. We got giant spiders.
All over the place.
Yeah, all over the place.
There's snowflakes that fall from the sky. Okay, so you're from Game Informer Australia.
Absolutely.
It's a completely separate magazine, or it's basically the magazine where you kind of shove some of your articles on top of it and call it Game Informer Australia. What is the setup here?
I just choose the good stuff you guys do, and I ditch the bad stuff.
So it's like three pages?
No! Zing, Game Informer. Really, though, subscribe now. It's a great magazine. Everybody should check it out. We're here at E3 2018. We've been seeing a lot of fun games. There's still games that we haven't really talked about on the podcast, which seems unbelievable because it seems like we've covered a lot of ground. Let's start things off. Dave Milner, seems like you had a life-fulfilling moment today.
Yeah, I had a really cool surprise. I had an Activision mystery appointment on my timetable, and I was convinced it was a theater demo, and it ended up being a one-on-one interview with Miyazaki-san from Software.
Wow. Okay, wait. This is interesting for people outside of E3, I think, like how this stuff gets set up. It's just somebody from Activision reaches out and says, do you want to take mystery appointment A?
Yeah, exactly. And usually my inclination is, tell me more. And if they say, we can't, I generally say, well, no.
Right.
But Activision is so... Activision don't release new IP. Like, that's not a thing they do very
They're
often.
Focused, yeah.
So right. I was kind of intrigued.
Wait a minute.
What do you mean you guys have got a new game? Yeah. That's not Skylanders. That's not Call of Duty. So I was intrigued.
You only have three things.
Yeah. So I said yes. I would have appreciated some prep time because interviews do actually require some thought. But at the same time, I'm a huge fan of this man's work.
What if you weren't, though?
Yeah, it would have been the most awkward 30 minutes of my life.
The good news is, like, from that Dark Souls 3 cover story trip when we went to From Software, is a good lesson in, like, oh, he's just a big old nerd dude. People expect him to be this, like, scary, intimidating beast that's going to punch you over the head. But it's like, he's just some D&D dork. It's not that bad, right? Yeah,
it was genuinely lovely. And, I mean, it's always tough when you're interviewing someone through a translator, but his personality came across. He was a funny guy.
What's the most insightful thing you learned about Sekiro Shadows Die Twice?
I mean, people are going to assume that it's Ninja Souls.
Right.
And I don't think it is. So.
How so?
Mostly the way movement works in the game. You have a grappling hook. Right. You're not that mobile in Dark Souls. You're sort of stuck in an environment and you need to deal with the challenges thrown at you. Big boss, you just have to deal with it. I saw a boss fight and this ninja was hooking into the trees and jumping around and evading and, you know, stuff that you don't do in a From Software game. And that was kind of fascinating.
But it still looked like it felt like Dark Souls. Do you feel like people are going to be turned off if they're a Souls fan and go into this game?
I wasn't turned off. Like, right, I got very, I think this is my, yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but I think this is definitely the game that excited me the most. It's the game that made me feel real human emotion at E3 this year.
Congratulations.
Wow. I know.
You
it's
did
big.
It.
It's
wow. Been, yeah. It's Birth of the Sun was like a 5 out of 10, but this is something else.
Yeah, no, it's been a while since I felt something.
Is that how Australians are?
We're just dead. That's how games journalists are. We're just dead inside.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, so it was very fast. It was very open. The map allegedly functions the way they usually do. It's all interconnected, so you get a continuous path the whole way through, which is exciting. I mean, I'm trying to remember because it's all such a blur. I didn't have questions written down.
Did you play the game? Sorry.
No one's playing the game.
Did you see any like stealth stuff? So is that stuff that like in the trailer kind of looked like there's some stealth
sequences?
Yeah, so
they're calling it light stealth.
Okay.
And it's basically, it's kind of Assassin's Creed-ish. It's thinning the herd before you go in there.
Okay, sure.
So we saw the ninja climb a tree. We saw him jump down, do an aerial assassination, kill a few guys, crawl along a wall, hide in some shadows, that sort of stuff. But I think ultimately they do want you to get the sword out. Miyazaki was saying that what he wants from this game is like steel on steel. He wants that Samurai Showdown kind of vibe. And
yeah.
That sounds
the so thing cool. The herd thing is that, like, what do you do in Dark Souls when you have a lot of enemies? You go there and you try to pick one off one at a time and pray you don't get close enough to aggro someone else. So it makes sense to actually put a mechanic in there.
Exactly. It does feel like an yeah, a logical extension, a lot of the stuff they do. There was some cool stuff around death. I mean, such a key part of Souls and Bloodborne.
Right.
And they have this mechanic called Resurrect, where they didn't explain the details, but you can die as a deliberate strategy. So they kill you, you actually do die. I don't know how it works in the lore, but then the enemies, that guy's dead, and they walk off, and they go, and they
job done.
Yeah, they reset the situation, and then you can just rise from the grave and stab them in the back again.
Which is
kind of interesting.
That's probably like just a cool off if you're getting like killed by like too many dudes. Like, hey, back off, guys, I'm dead.
Or Miyazaki like really likes Never Dead.
Maybe.
Does that cost like souls or something, or what?
They would not explain that. Oh, and they didn't even explain whether there are souls equivalent. There is a bonfire equivalent, something about an ancient statue that, I don't know.
Slice the head off at checkpoint.
Probably.
Interesting.
But yeah, they did not, they said there is a progression system, but it's not like what they've had before.
I like it. Yeah. It seemed like the most exciting thing that a lot of us have seen so far today, maybe the game of the show, talk of the show at least, Cyberpunk 2077. Reeves, did you get a chance to see it yet?
No, I swung by and the line was crazy, and I didn't see anybody I knew PR-wise, so I'm going to try by, swing by tomorrow and cut in front of everybody else.
You should. I got, this is like a
Did you see it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it was
I'm
like an E3 Hail Mary, where I went up and saw that crazy line, poked around the edges a little bit, and then a door happened to open, and the CEO of CD Projekt Red walked out.
Sure.
And I was like, hey, Ben from Game Informer, I was on the Witcher 3 cover story trip. I was in your studio 5 years ago.
Please remember me.
Witcher?
Yeah, it was a great time. We put it on the cover like that. And he was so sweet. He's like, all right, let's go right this way. We'll get you in this demo. And so it was like crammed against the far back wall right next to a speaker. So a lot of the audio was like distorted and kind of tough to hear the presenter. But so Imran, you saw it too?
I did.
Okay.
I snuck in with Kim and she very nicely asked all the PR people to please let me in.
Please.
He's like, he's our news editor and he's very small. He won't take up much space.
Yeah, there's so much buzz. It was a huge line. People were banging down the doors to get into this thing. It's a hell of a booth.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you guys didn't get the statues?
Oh, I got the statue.
Okay, I didn't get the statue.
I didn't look at the statue until I accepted it, which I probably should have. Which, it's if people haven't seen it, it's a woman scantily clad, but she has no like arms and legs. She like has like robot limbs.
It's the lady from the debut trailer, not the one this year, but like 5 years
ago. It was incredibly awkward to carry around for the rest of the day,
but still worth it in the end.
Yeah. I think I left mine at the Game Informer like booth.
There was like a stack of three of them.
Because
I mean, Game Informer is like all the people that went and saw the demo and didn't want it, just like stack them up. Yeah, I'll leave this here.
Like the idea is, if somebody comes in and takes it, oh well.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do.
So we got some toys, but that's about it. Let's see. We're talking about Rise of the Tomb.
No. But so you seemed kind of down on it earlier, like based on that trailer, the announced trailer.
I don't think I was down on it. I think I was just shocked by the shifting tone from what I was expecting.
Okay.
I think that second trailer, I don't know if like the darkness really was conveyed as much as I thought it was going to be. It felt more, as we talked about, a little bit more Ready Player One than I was expecting. But seeing that demo, like this is a very mature game, and they're key to point it out. But yeah, it's sexy. There's naked bodies all over the place. A lot of swearing. It's
okay.
It's darker than that trailer would imply.
Sure. Yeah,
kind of like your prom night, right?
Oh,
okay. It's gonna sound like the most obvious thing ever, but it's a lot more punk than I thought it would be.
Yeah, how so?
Like this, the amount of, like you said, the swearing, the dialogue, the general kind of laissez-faire, don't give a crap mentality of the main character.
Yeah.
Like it's I assume it would be kind of cyber noir more than it is, which I mean I don't necessarily need it to be that. I like the way the demo they showed us.
Is it as cyber as you thought it would be?
It is as cyber as I thought it was. So that part 100%.
Is it as 2077?
It's a good question.
I don't know. I feel like maybe 2076. They may be a little inaccurate there.
Right. This thing, I don't know if we should just get out of the gate talking about this. Like, good God. Like, I watched that demo and all I could think about as I was leaving that theater was like, I wonder if Bethesda saw this demo, because like, goodbye Bethesda, goodbye BioWare. Like, holy Jesus, this thing's impressive. I don't know if that's been conveyed to you yet, Reeves.
I mean, like the thing
I listened to Kim and Reiner talk a little bit about it, and they seemed like, and Kim especially, because she was like, after seeing the trailer,
she was
a little
down
bit down on it. And then after seeing the demo, she was like 180, like, this is the best game of the show. Like, it's amazing.
It's absurd. And also, I'm sure a version of it will run on this generation, but seeing that demo, yeah, it's like, yeah, this is no going to be pushing it. It was running on a PC.
It was like when you saw Witcher 3 the first time, you're like, that's not being on the PS3 and 360.
Ever. Right, right. Yeah.
But somehow they did it.
What did you think overall about that demo?
You're right. They did not do that.
The demo stuff, I mean, I was surprised by what it was at first. I was expecting something that looked a little bit more like The Witcher 3. It is a first-person Witcher 3 set in the Deus Ex universe, a colorful version of the Deus Ex universe. With the gunplay looked like Crysis almost, with all these mech suit abilities kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally. It reminded me a little bit of Titanfall. Like later on in the demo, it's like a 40-minute demo, just crazy in depth. But later on, you unlocked a couple different weapons that could... you could kind of hone into enemies. I don't know what the best way to phrase that would be, where you can like lock onto them and then the bullets would like ricochet off of walls, kind of like the smart pistol. Cool. Like they would even like curve around things just to track those enemies.
Yeah, like the tracking pistol in Titanfall, totally.
Right.
I was overwhelmed by the ambition. I mean, it's such a... the demo starts in a really small, confined space. You're in an apartment building, you're raiding this corridor. And it's clearly designed that way so that as soon as you get out of the apartment, you're overwhelmed by the city that you see. And it is, it's Blade Runner, basically. Mm-hmm.
It's a slightly more upbeat, but still dark as hell world. But it's different enough from Blade Runner, right? I don't feel like it's cliche. Speaking of which, as I was leaving the theater, David Cage was also exiting the theater. So I didn't get a chance to talk to him.
Was he weeping?
Yeah, exactly.
Was he like, androids are good?
Ripping up his next script. Damn it. Can't get anything right.
Just keep ripping them up, David.
Yeah, but they did such a good job. And the most interesting part of that demo, like there was a lot. They bring you through basically one short quest. It felt like the beginning of the game. And maybe it's just the demo.
I think it was.
Do you think so?
It said you've gone from level 1 to level 2, but they could have fudged that.
For sure. And they also have like the title splash. But it's like that very contained little mission, like you said, in the apartment where you're jacking into this corpse. And then you're actually picking up this naked woman after you like... Pulp Fiction put a syringe in her chest and you're like hauling this naked woman out of the apartment. It's like, this is a bizarre tone.
And the nipple is right in your
nipple's
view,
like at least 40 pixels wide.
What is this? Why are you doing all this?
What do you mean?
You have some sort of mission.
Oh, it's just a Thursday night? Is that what I mean?
You have some mission, I think, to rescue a woman.
Okay.
And like you find her in the back of a drug den, I guess you would call it.
Okay.
And she's like passed out. You call the... You check her to see what her insurance is first.
Sure.
And it says like, oh, she's super rich. She has great insurance. So that means the ambulance will get there faster.
She's worth it. Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
okay. It's a militarized ambulance service that will basically die for you.
Yeah.
Die? Really?
Like they threaten to shoot you for getting too close to the body.
That's bleak.
That sounds kind of cool, actually. I got to admit, like that's like the kind of world building that sounds really cool.
Yeah. And that's the most interesting thing about the demo, I think. Like the action looks solid. I was bracing for something with the gunplay more akin to like a Fallout 4. I think it looks better than Fallout 4 shooting overall. I mean, it's not going to look like Call of Duty.
Did you guys mention that it's first person?
Yeah. They hit that. It is shocking, though. Sure. Like, even though you're bracing for it, like when they first get into this demo, it's like, hey, this isn't Witcher 3. Yeah, like, this is...
There's a little bit of wall running even in the first person.
Really?
Yeah.
And what gets crazy, Reeves, is you remember in that first trailer, the lady with the blades? They're called Mantis Blades.
Okay.
And later on in the demo, you unlock them. And then she's like wall running and then like stabs the blades into the wall and then just hangs up there and like shoots enemies.
So
before she runs down and slices off heads.
Is this another character? Is this you?
This is you. This is
okay, you have those mantis blades.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You can eventually upgrade to them. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But that world is stupid. There are so many NPCs roaming around in that city and it just looks... It doesn't look canned. I felt like they could have stopped at any moment and just stared at something for 5 minutes and you could have just absorbed everything there.
Yeah. Like they were bragging that like we have like the best city tech in the world now, which if you look at it, it really looks like it.
I mean, Witcher 3 had pretty good city tech. Yeah. Like that's big city of theirs was good.
This is easily like the small bit they showed of the like central hub.
Yeah.
Looked like easily a couple of hundred distinct people.
Okay.
Yeah. It's absurd. And they said, so it all takes place in Night City. And Night City has 6 different districts. And something I wasn't expecting is part of the way into the demo, the main character just jumps into a car and then you're driving a car around first person.
Oh, first person?
Yeah.
Well, also
that was the only time
they
zoomed out to third person mode. Like you could drive in third person, but I didn't see on foot third person.
I wonder if there will be third person for like the non-driving segments.
Well, I don't think so.
I think the demo was pretty clear. Like he did say this is a first person game.
Yeah.
It is weird. I like first person games. And I drive in first person all the time in real life, but for some reason, driving in first person in video games is
it feels
weird.
Like you don't have enough.
I'm the same. You just don't see enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Good. Other big impressions? What else stood out to you guys from that demo?
That the partner, I'm pretty sure, was voiced by John DiMaggio, and I couldn't not hear Waka after a certain point.
Oh, really? The Hispanic guy, buddy? Huh.
Which at one Surreal Vesquez, we both went to the demo together, and on the way back, he was reminding me that every single line, they had to have that last word of Spanish in there that reminds you that he's Hispanic.
And like, come on, hombre. It's a lot of that type of thing.
Like everything, like pendejo. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's kind of... I mean...
He's also the character who said, I got news as big as my balls at one point, right?
Yes.
There were some cringy lines.
Oh, yeah. I know about balls.
Reezer, really? Yeah. That's shorts, right. By the way. Looking good, man. Oh, the writing wasn't bad, but it definitely was just one of those things where, like, oh, that partner... Yeah, it could get annoying.
Perhaps it wasn't the writing was bad. This character is just designed to be cringy, perhaps.
I think that could be it. Hmm. Yeah, yeah. But definitely your character had more spunk, like you mentioned, a little more punky attitude. And they basically have the role of being a witcher in this world, where they're kind of like a mercenary for hire, roaming around. Like, they don't belong to anybody. They're going to do their own thing and solve problems, take quests from who they want. Like,
and your demo did... Oh, go ahead.
They talk. They're like a voiced character.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Did they go through the character creator?
They showed it. So you don't choose we didn't see any classes. They said it was more fluid than
class
that.
Fluid.
Deliberately
said
that.
Yeah, you don't start out choosing a class.
You it was a bit like Mass Effect. You chose your backstory. You chose the tragic events that happened in your life, and that affected certain stats.
Okay.
Male and female, fully customizable faces and appearances.
Okay. Just like real life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can always choose what we look like.
Sure.
I think the thing that impressed me was that. Classic CD Projekt thing where one long quest kind of felt like four or five quests tied together. You never know where one quest starts and one quest ends. You got this first little task, then you need to go get the gun, and you got, basically the quest was we needed to get a mech from some gangsters that had stolen it, and you could choose how you do it. You could go get the money from a legitimate source. You could rob people.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I didn't see this demo, but I love The Witcher. And like what those guys did and just like integrating story with mission design is top tier, first in class. Like, it could be the most boring mission objective in the world, but the way they like integrate a story into it, like, it felt like the coolest thing. Like, so I'm on board. I love the setting even more than The Witcher, I think. So I'm really gonna just, I don't know, I'm gonna sneak in somehow tomorrow.
You definitely should.
In your demos, did they mention that when the guy leaves the apartment, they talked about how you can have one night stands?
No, I don't think I heard that.
No, he just said, like, you can interact in this world with in interesting ways and very mature ways. I think with the line where it's like, is that implying?
He mentioned that. He said it even for one night.
Oh, interesting.
Which is why I think, like, that guy just left.
Huh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it starts out with some guy in your apartment heading out. And they chose to play as the lady version of V in this demo as well. That seems cool. Sorry, BioWare. We got romances in this one, and they're going to be extreme in every possible way.
What did you guys think of the inhaler? Was that heavily implied drug use? Because I'm worried this game is going to get banned in Australia.
Yes,
basically.
I saw your tweet about that. I was like,
why do you think that?
You don't have any asthmatics in Australia?
I mean, that's how they should spin it. Absolutely how they should spin it. No, historically, the thing that gets games stricken off is drug use tied to gameplay enhancements. And this was definitely a buff.
Happy Few, just an example.
Exactly. You just covered that on the site. Yeah. This is almost an identical situation, basically. It doesn't matter whether it's a fictional drug, apparently, because We Happy Few is called Joy. That doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's just speculation. I'm sure that will sort it out.
Right, but it is so, Reeves, like, throughout the demo, a lot, it seems like you're taking a little inhaler-type thing. It really looks like an old-fashioned inhaler to, like, get your health recovery. Also, to slow down time in some shootouts.
That's how it works.
Yeah, it was wild.
All right.
And also, like, there are a lot of numbers flying off these enemies. The UI is interesting. You know how, like... Fallout's UI looks a little bit outdated and odd. It's just like that hyper green everywhere.
Yeah.
Imagine that, but if everything's red. There's a lot of red text on the screen. I was kind of struck.
It's small text, too.
Like, does it look cool, though?
What's that?
Does it look cool? Did you like it?
It's unique. I wonder how much they're going to tweak it. It's
kind of
not...
like Terminator vision, right? Isn't that
it? It does, kind of looks at overall. And even like, you know, they create a class, or like when you create the character in the start of the game and you're choosing like your backstory, but whether or not your sibling died and all that stuff, everything's just... hyper red. It's like creating a character in a Virtua Boy or something. It's a weird vibe.
Kind of old school too, like really simple fonts and
but it's like, you know, they'll have like tracking on the screen like for where other characters are around you and stuff, so It's aggressive, but I guess it's a unique take, and I will trust these guys to do whatever the hell they want with this game.
I think they've earned that right, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I really liked about the world building is it doesn't do that thing every other game does where it acts like you're an idiot and explains things to you because you as the player don't understand the world yet. Everything to them is very matter of fact because they've been living in the world.
Right.
So like when they do bother to explain things, it is in a very natural way.
Okay. I love that. That's the most grating thing when you see it in a movie or a game is like, and this is this way because of blah.
They do a good job with that. Yeah, you're right. It's not your main character isn't waking up having been in a coma for 100 years or something. So like at some point she gets like an enhancement and the surgeon's kind of like walking her through what's happening to her arm. And it makes sense in the context of like replaces her eye or like changes her eye so that she can like zoom in, which is bizarre. And he makes some reference to like, you can trust me in my Ganic hand, as he calls it.
It's like, Ganic hand.
That being said, I'm pretty sure the powerful woman from the corporation said, corporations rule this world. We get what we want.
Yeah, that was...
It's a bit on the nose.
A bit on the nose, but still very cyberpunk.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of like the trailer, too, where he's talking about, my name's V, and you know, I live in the biggest city in the world, Night Vale or whatever.
It's a trailer.
Yeah, for sure. It's also fun. When I left the theater, is it William Gibson? What's the name of the creator of Cyberpunk?
If that sounds right.
William Gibson, something like that. He
tweeted about it. Yeah.
He tweeted and he wasn't too...
He's down on that.
Yeah, but he was there. I don't know if CD Projekt Red was like, let us show you the actual gameplay. But yeah, he was there. I shook his hand briefly. Yep.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So I didn't get his thoughts on the gameplay, but I'm sure they're giving him the full court press to be like, look, we're honoring your game.
Please, don't judge it on the trailer. Stop tweeting.
Yeah. It feels weird to have like this old school style E3 demo where it's 40 minutes behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. And people are just left to vaguely tell the tale of like, and then the character was in first person and they slid on the floor for this one part and it was totally awesome. And then they did this.
The last 5 years has been like, they'll do a demo and then like the next day, like that demo that you see at E3 is just on the internet.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that publishers would want to do that.
Yeah.
But you rarely get this like behind closed doors demo that they don't show to anybody else.
I mean, they're kind of old school, those guys.
I mean, they'll probably put it up online eventually.
I mean, tomorrow they probably have to,
right? But yeah, tomorrow as soon as we've said this. But yeah.
And it was somebody playing too, just in case anybody's suspicious. Like the game looked great, absolutely amazing. There were occasional hiccups here and there, so it wasn't like a finely polished video for 40 minutes. You could tell that it was legit.
The person who was playing hits like a trash can during our demo.
You're right. Okay. Also, this is crucial. The world needs to know. In the menus, from what we saw, Destiny cursor. Free-floating cursor in Cyberpunk 2077. Yeah, there we go, boys. Also, I was surprised by loot on the equipment screen. There was like a purple gun that was called like an Epic. So I don't know if they're going pure Diablo colors, but it's in there.
Did Witcher 3 have rarity?
Purple's pretty common for Epic, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or for Legendary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, but because Blizzard set that standard, I believe it's them that set the color code.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Feeling good about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the bigger question is, when's it coming out?
Have they said 2019 or anything?
I think they might have done, but I remember I saw The Witcher 3.
I think they said 2077.
Yeah. We could not make this more clear, you guys. We're going
to the title of the game. Long way to go, guys. I'm pretty sure I saw The Witcher 3 at maybe 2 or 3 E3s before it came out.
Yeah,
Yeah, you're totally right. And it'd be a hell of a game to launch the next generation with. For sure.
Absolutely.
God. Really, though? Looking at that game and then going back and looking at something even like Fallout 76?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
I mean, well, that's this year. Although you did mention Bethesda and BioWare, and Bethesda's next game is Starfield, which is sci-fi, because it'd be interesting if their game and this launched the same year. Like, I don't know.
Oh,
that's possible.
So many comparison videos. Get ready
for
it.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be.
Yeah, but I can't imagine Starfield will come anywhere close to having the density of this world. Like, that's the crazy thing.
Well, it reminds me, like, BioWare released Dragon Age, the third one, Inquisition. It was going to come out the same year as Witcher 3, but Witcher 3 got delayed, which is, I think, was a good thing for BioWare Inquisition, because, like, comparing those two games is, like...
Yeah.
Well, Inquisition
Witcher
got out game of the year.
Witcher 3 blows it out of the water. Yeah, that's because we hadn't played Witcher yet.
But, yeah, that's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about it for a while.
I think so. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't take out our Hot 50, to be honest.
Yeah, we'll see. But I know that Andy and Reiner saw it, and they're both salivating. So, good God, it's going to be big. Resident Evil 2 remake. Reeves, you saw
where do we go from there? No, I mean, that sounded way more negative than that. Actually, Witcher, or sorry, oh gosh, Resident Evil 2 is possibly my game of the show.
Because really?
I haven't seen Cyberpunk yet.
I'm actually
yet.
There too.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't seen Cyberpunk.
I really
think I like
it
Resident Evil 2 more.
Yeah, it's, and I'm, admittedly, I'm all in on this. Like, RE2 is one of my favorite games of all time to begin with. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm going in hot on this and wanting to like it. But they were checking off all my boxes, right?
List like, those boxes. What are they checking off?
Over-the-shoulder camera.
Four.
And, like, normal controls. No tank controls. You can move and shoot. Like, all the, like, good stuff. But it's not, like, super action-y like 4 was. It's a little bit slower paced and moodier and scary.
So is it the start of RE2 that they showed off?
They showed off the police station, which is very near the start
right.
of RE2.
Right, yeah. Not out in the street.
Right.
Okay.
And like the Resident Evil remake on the GameCube, they kind of play with your expectations a little bit. So you go through the police station on a different route.
But it's still the same structure.
But the layout is almost identical.
Okay.
One thing they pointed out is a lot of people have made fun of the, RE2 for not having bathrooms in their police station, like the original one.
People talked about that?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, but they added bathrooms this time around. So
did they really go out of their way to point that out?
Yeah, we've heard the fans.
Is this, what is this demo? Are you playing it? Are you watching in a big
theater?
Yeah,
I got to play it. Yeah.
Oh, you got
and
to play
Imran
it.
Imran played it too, actually. Mm-hmm.
How cool was the room? It was like a haunted house with blood all over the walls.
They did. They have a haunted house in there. There's like a maze when you go in for the game.
Yeah.
Well, their booth I was talking about is a haunted house. So you go in and they have somebody dressed up like a zombie and jumps out and tries to scare you.
Which I knew was going to happen, but it's
terrified Imran.
Yeah. Imran, did you crap your pants?
I did not crap my pants.
All right, there we go.
But yeah, then you play in like kind of a, I don't know if people care about this part of E3, but like you play in a reconstructed, it's supposed to look like the police station. It kind of has that vibe.
Okay.
But it's cool.
Okay, so does it feel like something like the Revelation series, like a higher produced version of the Revelations?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Yeah. I think it feels better than that. It's because Revelations is still a little bit more actiony than this is.
Yeah.
This is slower. His run speed is actually, I played as Leon. His run speed is a little bit slow. I think that's intentional to like kind of ratchet up the tension when like zombies start crawling through the windows.
Sure.
Yeah. The action is cool because I thought this was cool anyway. When you aim, your reticle is kind of like bigger and it starts to zoom in to a pinpoint. Like if you give it a second.
Catching Pokemon Go
right.
style.
Exactly. You'll love this. And so aiming up, lining up headshots, you kind of want to wait a second. So it builds up the tension because you're trying to get like a finer headshot.
That seems like a pretty dramatic change to gameplay there. That's wild.
Yeah, I liked it because it ratcheted up the tension a little bit.
Sure. You got to look at these freaky things.
Right, yeah. And it's not, again, super action-packed like you have like 20 dudes coming at you. You'll have two or three, but because of the fine point aiming, like it's kind of like tense.
But also it's like it's incredibly, even if you do have two or three is a lot for that system. So if you, there was a part where I think you, once you get the booklet from the officer who dies, that you have to run back out and a bunch of zombies start flooding into the halls.
Right.
And by a bunch, I mean like three. But it's incredibly difficult because I can't take the time to sit there and aim at a zombie head while another zombie is coming behind me.
Right. And it's traditional survival horror, so you're going to have to manage your resources, your ammo. I ran out of ammo at one point.
I got maybe 30 bullets during the entire demo.
Yeah. But the cool thing is the map system, I think, is super smart. It shows you like which rooms you've completely searched and which ones you haven't.
Completely searched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, it's like this one's cleared. So you know you got all the stuff from that room.
Yeah.
And it also like auto highlights stuff as soon as like you go into a room and you get close to an object, it'll like show up on your map. So you know, oh, I left a spray there because I couldn't pick it up.
Right.
So I can go back and pick that up or pick up some ammo because I left it there.
Yeah, with some guests walking in. Guys, help yourself, have a seat. There's some beer in the fridge, some water in the fridge, whatever you guys want. You'll be on in a little bit. Hey, folks. So it feels like exactly what you wanted from Resident Evil 2?
I think it is exactly what I want from a Resident Evil 2 remake. It's like got rid of the camera and the controls, which everybody, I don't want to say everybody, a lot of people were like, eh, these things are pretty dated at this point.
Yeah.
They're reshaping the sort of shape of the campaign a little bit, but they're still like holding true to what you remember about it. I will say we asked about the zapping system because you could play like through twice and like your playthrough with one character would affect the playthrough with the other one.
Mm-hmm. Help me out. Zapping's what they called it?
That's zapping, what they called it. Yeah.
Because Kamiya and Mikami really like that word.
I guess. It doesn't make any sense.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're not really doing that, but they are going to have two campaigns. So Leon and Claire will have like separate campaigns.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
For the same environments?
So the idea in Resident Evil 2
was different. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
the idea in Resident Evil 2 was that they were going through the PlayStation at the same time.
Yeah.
So let's say in Leo's scenario one, you turn on some gas and it makes the enemy stronger for Claire scenario B. So they're not doing that this time, but they are going to have the same basic story.
Why?
I think
there's not though. That sounds cool.
Hmm?
It was cool, but I mean, it's a lot of work.
It's very tedious to get certain enemies to show up. Like to actually see the results of the zapping system required a lot of backtracking. So they're like, that's too tedious. We want to try and make it easier for people to see the cool stuff.
Right. And the benefit I think is like both campaigns will feel different.
Yeah.
And so you'll get like a better story, a better feel for the game and, you know, two campaigns for one.
Yeah. One thing I think was super cool was like in that demo, I probably killed like, let's say 10, 15 zombies, but every single one looked different. It looked like a distinct, different person.
Not just a police guy every single time?
Not just a police guy every single time. And the reason that is because RE2 is using the RE7 engine. And that has I forget the word, like phototelemetry or something like that.
Uh-huh.
That they
sounds like a buzzword.
Yeah, but what they do is they take pictures of things and then they like scan it in on top of the models.
Yeah, it looks really good. I think.
There was one particular scene where a zombie's head has been cleaved in half and you can see the sinews pulling out of it, and that was incredibly graphic and photorealistic. It was like a Mortal Kombat X fatality, but zoomed in much closer.
Reeves, you're gonna have to help me remember if this was a thing in RE2, but the boards to block up windows?
No, that's not a thing. Okay. So I didn't do that. Did you do that?
I ended up doing it once because I saw the zombie getting in from a window I had broken.
Okay, yeah. So you find like boards and you can board up windows when zombies like break in. And then board it up so
that
they
really
can't get
weird
in
a game like Resident Evil. So is it implying that it's a little more dynamic than the original one?
Yeah, I think it's because you're backtracking through areas and sort of like shore up your defenses a little bit.
Yeah.
The other thing, speaking of that, is I love in the Resident Evil remake on GameCube, they would have defensive weapons like knives and
Tim,
stuff.
Hey, Tim, there's a camera right behind you, goofus.
Tim, come in front of it.
Tim Turner, everybody. Come on, Mike. Come on. We're talking about Resident Evil. If you want to jump in,
talk about it?
Sure.
Yeah, come in. Take my spot, please. We've covered absolutely every detail in exhaustive amounts, but go ahead and dive in, please.
Okay, all right, cool. as long as every stone has been uncovered.
There's nothing more you can say about this. Except for the thing I'm about to say is I was talking about the knives, actually, in a Resident Evil remake for the GameCube. I don't know if you remember those, the defensive weapons. That was only place, unless I'm wrong, where those showed up. And they're bringing them back as like the combat knives. So like when a zombie comes in to attack you, you can use your combat knife and stab them so they don't bite you.
You can also just use it as like a normal knife. I don't like the Resident Evil 4 style knife of just swipe.
Yeah, and you can retrieve it from the zombie after you've used
it. Was it like that in the original too?
Yeah, so you could retrieve them, but you had to get a headshot. So either you had to get lucky with like the sort of RNG behind using a handgun on a zombie, or you'd use a shotgun and then you'd like shoot the zombie's head off. That'd be a very satisfying tink, and you could pick it back up. But now it's just, you know, easier just to get out to, you know, retrieve. Awesome. So
The one thing I didn't ask, and maybe Tim, you can help us out, is I remember like redhead zombies, the crimson heads in remake. I loved those. Are those returning? You want to share anything?
You want to
spoil and lose your job?
Thank you. So the first question is something I cannot answer, which is fantastic. I mean, basically just showing off the enemies that are available in the demo, but are basically trying to live up to everybody's expectations about what they would like from a Resident Evil 2 game. But so did you all get a chance to play it?
We have all played it.
You have all played it. Okay.
I'm curious to know your thoughts though, Tim. We've been talking. So,
So I'm
like just... as a guy who works at Capcom, is this like a dream project?
So I'm super excited.
Just
obviously.
As a guy.
And you should all pre-order it.
Yeah. So like, I mean, the reason that I joined Capcom to begin with was because of Resident Evil. Like they're ramping up for Resident Evil 7 and like I was just ready to jump in and help however I can. But I thought, and this is on record, that even ever before I started at Capcom, that the Resident Evil remake is the best horror game that's ever been made.
Right.
And I've stood by that. But one of the reasons I love that is because, like a good horror movie remake, not only is it a good retelling of the story in a really faithful way that kind of modernizes it, it plays off the expectations of what fans are going into. So, right. You know, you expect a jump scare or something to happen over here, and then they flip the script. That thing doesn't happen, and they blindside you. You know, I think in the demo, there's a good example of the window in the West Hall, the precinct, where this liquor usually, you know, zips across the...
I was looking for him.
Pavement. Where the liquor zips across the window. That doesn't happen. Instead, you see claw marks in the wall and blood, and so it's like, there's like a nod. I feel seen as a fan that, like, they know my expectations going into that. And, you know, Hirabayashi-san, he worked on the Resident Evil remake. He knows those sorts of expectations that go into it. And I'm excited to see, like, even more how they subvert and kind of play with the expectations that fans have. But, yeah, so I'm pumped for it. Like, personally, I'm a big fan of, like, being able to have free aim and stuff. So,
yeah. No, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was saying it's my game of the show so far, so
yeah
I'm excited. Super stoked for
not
it.
Mine but yeah. You know, it was cool.
The haters over here, but
it's coming so ridiculously soon. Like, I don't have to be excited for that long.
Yeah, as a fan of games and so, I mean, that's a good move. As a fan of games and someone who also is now, you know, working on bringing them to market, like the shorter campaigns are, I'm all about those. Don't make people wait.
Yeah, no, I love that too.
We only ask people to wait since 2015.
It comes out when?
January 25th.
That's awesome.
Tim, I didn't know you were swinging by.
Yeah, well, surprise.
Hey, hey. Hey. I'm glad you got the tail end of Resident Evil 2.
Yeah, thanks for letting me like sneak in here and crash. Now to talk about Mega Man 11.
Oh, God. All right, guys. You can jump in, shooting this one.
We already talked.
You got your cute little things where people can pose with the Buster there.
Totally a very different video game than Resident Evil 2. But the self-defense items and headshots work very differently in Mega Man 11. Yeah.
But as a Resident Evil 2 nerd, it must be fun to like go around that booth and like have the cop car and like the rebuilt area.
100%.
Biggest nerd out moment. Is there anything you're really excited that they put in that little detail?
So, I mean, like the weirdest, nerdiest thing was like when we were doing setup the first night, they were doing set dressing on the in the booth, and they realized that they had calendars, they had like cork boards that cops, you know, like RPD cops, like, you know, theoretically would have been like putting notes up on. They're like, hey, can you just like write a bunch of notes for the set dressing? So it's just like, how can I do this? Okay, I think
without breaking canon.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I don't know if the outbreak exactly happens on September 29th in this, you know, retelling of the story, but it's just like, okay, dog attack. Let's investigate dog attack. Where's Barry? Rebecca's asking, where's my first aid medicine? Just like goofy stuff. But the whole experience, like the whole Capcom ride has been a big like fan nerd out extreme thing. So
Right.
Did you go through the main entrance of the booth where they have like the
was too terrified
corridor?
No, I didn't even go there.
Me and Imran did that.
Did you?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. There's a zombie that attacked us. Spooky. The funny thing, like Surreal did that. He was like the first visit of the show, and they didn't have that set up yet. So he walked through this hallway. It was totally lit up, and nobody was in there. Was like, what is this? Why is this crazy long hallway?
It's like turning the gamma all the way up in a video game.
Right. The equivalent, like they also have like this weird immersive theater thing at E3 going on for like Fallout 76, where they have these little booths where it's like, hey, a couple little rooms from Fallout, and they have like a fake scientist in there or someone like passing the time. But I was there so early that no fans or guests had gone in there, so I just stood and watched this person like trying to entertain themselves and act busy in like a 4x4 room for like 10 minutes, and they're like, let's check this calendar again by myself. And then ran over and scribbled something on the table.
Before we move on from RE2, Ben, we have to talk about the rat.
Oh, the rat's interesting. So they started off the trailer with a rat.
Yeah.
If you guys remember. And then we went and did our interview with
the producers.
Yeah, the producers. And like they have this like stuffed
Hirabayashi,
Yeah, they have the stuffed rat on the table. And they're like, oh, I'm curious what the deal with the rat is. And they're like, oh, this is Kevin Jr. And they started talking as the rat for a minute.
Like, hello, how are you doing?
Hello, how are you?
What the hell?
It was super weird.
That sounds cute, Tim.
We took a photo with them, and they insisted that Kevin Jr. be in the photo.
Yeah. All right.
We actually had to retake the photo because Kevin Jr. wasn't able to be seen.
The rat's with the red eye.
Okay. That's perfect.
The rats spread the virus.
That's true. Mm-hmm. So it is crucial. So it wasn't just a weird fake out with that trailer
I mean, there's sort of a reason. The intro to Resident Evil Outbreak a little bit. There's like a really artful intro to that game where it takes place from the perspective of a rat.
Okay.
And you're like overseeing like Hunk's team being taken over by William Birkin and stuff, like underneath the sewers and stuff. Really cool.
Yeah.
But
cool. Resident Evil 2 remake. When's it coming out, Tim? When's it coming out?
Resident Evil 2 comes out on January 25th.
There we go.
Takes place in Raccoon City.
Yeah. Well, that sounds exciting.
Uh-huh.
Very cool. You also played Shadow of the Tomb Raider, but we have so many guests here that overall, feeling good?
Overall, feeling good. I was a little worried when they moved it to a different studio in Montreal, but from what I played, it seems good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, yeah.
Did
I'm,
you see the big hub? The Aztec city in the village?
What I played was a very sort of straightforward sequence, like some puzzling, some action, some stealth. Good mix of everything. I feel like they have that formula pretty down, so it's fun.
Is there a button in Shadow of the Tomb Raider where Lara just apologizes for causing the apocalypse? Just like a hotkey for apologizing?
Really should.
You can pat llamas, and there's a button for that. I did notice that.
Is that true?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, they had to.
They
get
played
rid of
Uncharted
the
too. They're big fans. Good point. Yeah. That's cool.
Because of the llama button. Yeah.
Did you write something on the site about it?
I did not. I think Jeff Cork did.
Okay, so Google that.
So yeah, I would look that up. I think that is up and it's good.
Okay, great. Hey, everybody. I think that's it for a good first half of this episode of the podcast. This is where it gets confusing, Tim, trying to structure this stuff.
Cool.
So if you're watching it live, we're going to go down for about 10, 15 minutes, probably 10 minutes, then come back up with a great developer panel. This couch is going to be packed, but it'll be fun. If you're watching the YouTube version, a separate YouTube video will be up that you can find in our feed. That'll be the developer panel. Audio version, it'll be coming up right after this break. Tim, look at the computer right next to you there. Do you see there's two buttons on the right-hand side that say stop streaming and stop recording?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to press those pretty soon.
Don't press the wrong one.
And bye, everybody. No. Thanks for watching. We'll be back. Holy God, welcome back to E3 2018.
Oh my God.
I'm still here. You can see it's not possible to pack any more bodies on this couch. We wanted to make it as informed of a couch as humanly possible here. I'm really happy we got everybody here.
This is the Royal Rumble of interviews.
Really?
At the end.
Dive in, take each other out.
Last one stays on the sofa wins.
There's a tiny triangle of space right here. Someone else could get in there.
Let me fill in. Get in
there.
Get in there.
Plenty of room over here.
Okay, who's here? For the audio listeners, this is chaos. All right. Jason Rubin is here, who officially is the VP of content for Oculus.
Correct.
Also, you happen to co-found a Naughty Dog, is that right?
Many, many years ago.
I'm sure 1985. People bring it up every single day. Congratulations
Thank
again
you.
On that.
Who's Dang. What's Naughty Dog? What's that?
I don't know. I don't work there anymore.
Wild
they kind of make games.
We also have the CEO of Twisted Pixel, Bill Meal.
Thank you for inviting me to your apartment.
Yes. This is great. You can stay as long as you want. It's like $25 a night for extra people to sleep over.
Reasonable. I'll take it.
Okay, great. Twisted Pixel director Josh Baer.
Good to be here, guys. Thank you very much. Love this position. Really comfy right now.
Your shorts
really
loving
great, it.
Man. Could
Thank
not
you.
Be
Thank
better.
You.
We have Mike Builder, the CEO of Jackbox.
Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, it's an honor. And Allard
Laban,
there we go. You informed me, VP of Creative and Studio Art Director for Jackbox as well.
That is correct.
Okay, now it's up to you guys to figure out what you have in common outside of Chicago. Does anybody know each other here?
Well, we work together.
Yeah. Of course,
we had a bunch of projects together, Wilson's Heart and Defector, which has been announced. So
yeah,
it's so that's three on two already.
We
so
should be familiar.
You got to come
so,
up with somebody.
So Mike and I work together
right.
too.
Right. And I know Bill. I used to work with him at Midway Games.
Really? What did you do at Midway?
Well, a lot of things. I was the Chicago studio head when I left.
Oh, so. Wild. Yeah. And then what did you do at Midway?
Before it all went down in flames, I was part of a central team, which helped all the other game devs, as they started acquiring a lot of studios across the U.S. and overseas, just kind of coordinating a lot of the resources across the game teams.
What do you guys think?
You were also Sub-Zero, right? Isn't that...
Oh my God!
Yes, what?
We're going to get into that right
Are you
now.
Kidding?
Are we getting into that?
He's lost a little of the muscle mass since then, but yes.
Okay, I just destroyed the.
No, this is for which Sub-Zero are you?
Thanks, Jason.
The Babalities.
Yeah. I was probably more like a Shaky Jake.
Yes, that's right.
What is the story? What is this? What do you know?
Seriously, he was Curtis Stryker. He wasn't Sub-Zero. Yeah. That's a joke.
It's
he
just late, Stryker. And it's been a long E3. So that's a throwaway.
I got really
just ignore that guy.
I can do it.
There's no depth.
We're going to edit this, right?
Yeah.
What do you guys think of when you look back at your time at Midway? What's the overall lesson of Midway's art?
All right. Mike?
Wow.
That's a big question.
Yeah. Don't just acquire a boatload of studios and think you can suddenly make 9 AAA games in a couple year period.
Microsoft, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the downside?
There was a massive growth plan, and the burn just went through the roof, and games were late, and there wasn't. you know, any kind of revenue to support it. We made a couple games that made real good money, but they couldn't support the burn.
Yeah, and so This Is Vegas is left by the wayside.
You got it. This Is Vegas is definitely one of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's also a shared technology mandate that was a little rough for some of the teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it tried to grow way too big, way too fast. So.
Yeah.
But still some cool stuff that came out of it for sure. NetherRealm's still making some great stuff.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of cool stuff in Chicago came out of it, right? Yeah. Iron Galaxy, Jackbox has started up, all that stuff.
Yeah. So, how big is Jackbox these days?
We're 30 people.
Really?
So we're pretty small. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
30 people.
30 people. We do
5 games a year.
5 games a year in a pack, and then we put it out on 10 platforms simultaneously. So.
And is everybody just sprinting at all times?
Right now.
We are sprinting.
Absolutely, right now.
Sprinting hard right now. But we have sort of a cycle over the year where we kind of ideate during the winter months and then, you know, get our selections down. We usually have, 10, 20 games to pick from. And then we narrow it down to 5. And then we just work.
It just feels like a constant game jam in that place of like, what can we crank out in this window, like a 7-month production period or whatever it might be.
It was very chaotic at first, but we've gotten much better with our process and kind of incubating and prototyping and testing and figuring out what's going to work. But yeah, it's fun in that way. It's very game jam like.
Yeah. So Jackbox Party Pack 5. How you doing over there, Josh?
Loving it.
Feeling good?
Feeling great.
Have you guys ever played the Jackbox Party Pack games at all?
I have not, but I used to sell them. When I was in college, I worked at it's now GameStop, but it was Babbage's. So I used to sell those games.
You sold You Don't Know Jack.
You don't know Jack.
PC CD-ROM.
That's what it was, yeah. Back big box.
Right.
All that good stuff.
Right. Big bald face on it.
Yeah. The big, scary dude.
His name is Mick.
Yeah.
And he's now a chiropractor.
Sorry, Mick, you're not a scary dude. I take that back.
This is the lore. And now You Don't Know Jack is back, right?
Yeah, we just announced it as one of the games in Pack 5.
That's wild. Yeah. What was that process like to finally bring that thing back?
About 3.5 years to figure out we actually wanted to do it. It's a big game. And try to figure out how to do it in current day, current platforms. But it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, we had a little we got a little guff from people, especially about the Jack Attack that we did with mobile. There was sort of a small amount of latency, so people got kind of salty about that. So we addressed that. We have a whole new Jack Attack that is designed for mobile. So,
really?
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's been a weird year, like a year span for trivia games and games that are close to your guys' field of view just with HQ.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have played HQ at all.
Yeah.
I would love to know what you guys think of that phenomenon.
It's amazing. It's great.
Yeah.
We've always kind of dreamt of a sort of like real-time, event-based trivia thing. But you know, the servers and all that kind of bandwidth required was just not doable for a small company like us.
Right.
I think what's really interesting is there's appointment-based programming in the gaming space now,
right,
where everything is DVR, consume it when you want, you know, you don't have to do it live, and here this thing pushes notifications and everyone gathers around, like gathering around primetime TV. And the fact that that exists and works is really interesting. And
Have you played it, Jason?
HK? I have.
What do you
think? I did. I mean, it's brilliant, right? There's probably millions of people trying millions of things, and this is the one that rose to the top. But I have friend groups that don't play games at all, and they're playing it. Yeah. You know, I was over New Year's, I was at a ranch friend has up in Santa Ynez, which is about 2 hours north of here in LA. And people that I never thought would be playing games, all of a sudden, everyone's scurrying around. What the hell is going on here? HQ Trivia, HQ Trivia. I'm like, we're playing Trivia Pursuit? I had no idea what's going on.
Right.
And they're all playing. It's insane.
What is that? Is it just so simple that everybody can jump on board? Or what creates that type of game where everybody just has to do it no matter what and no one's turned off by the form factor?
I'd love to know. I mean, what's the recipe? Yeah.
Josh, the insight. Like, what's like the greatest breakthrough for you guys, I think, Twisted Pixel, where you felt like the widest audience is playing your games?
Oh, man. Wide audience in Twisted Pixel is still in the works, I would say.
It's a VR hockey stick. We're going to...
I mean, it's hard, man. I mean, for us, it was it's completely different, I think. I mean, we were trying to, when we first started out, and I would say to a certain amount now still, we would start with like characters. It was trying to find like the next Mario or, you know, the next Crash, or just, you know, trying to put personality in characters and see if that would stick, and then you could bring anyone in. And it's just so different now that, you know, from what we started with, what we're trying to do now, because, you know, with the Rift and all this stuff, we're trying to make you. So it's a lot.
Just to remove character.
Not to remove character, not by any means, but to bring character into you when we don't know you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess so.
Is an interesting kind of design challenge. So trying to kind of work on that.
I think on HQ Trivia, there are a lot of people, you know, when I started making games 30 some odd years ago, nobody played games. You had to be a geek. It was the stigma of playing games, let alone making games, was huge. And there's still large swaths of humanity that, or at least Western humanity, that don't want to say they're gamers.
Totally.
And yet it's so innate in human nature. You hand something to them like HQ Trivia, which isn't a game, but is a game. And they're immediately, you know, involved in it. They just need that excuse that, oh, I'm not a gamer, but I love this, right? My wife's like that. She's not a gamer. She spends more than I do on games because she gets into some mobile thing. It ends up picking her pocket for hundreds of dollars. And I'm like, what's going on with the Apple bill lately? And she's like, ah, it happened again. Not a gamer.
Right.
Not a gamer, no.
It's so confusing.
But spends a huge amount of money on games.
Totally. Talking to people on the street, and they're like, yeah, I don't play games. Well, I play Candy Crush all the time, but exactly. That's not a game. It's like, what is definition of a game then, everybody? It's confusing.
Right.
Yeah. I don't get it. Okay, what are you guys showing off at E3 this year?
Yes, we have Defector, which we announced a couple months ago. Yeah, so that's our next kind of big Oculus title that we're working with Jason's publishing team on. So that's like putting players into a role as a super spy. So kind of letting people act out like, you know, crazy situations that are in exotic locales with really tons of action and stuff. And Josh can probably talk to a lot of the crazy stuff we're doing with that.
We just want it to be cool, man.
Mm-hmm. Just the coolest thing.
When you can put on the headset and you can see your hands. I mean, that's the biggest thing still for most people, even when they have played, they can see their hands. And to be like, okay, well, what can I do with my hands? Well, you can do a lot of cool, crazy, crazy shit with that. So every kind of part of our game is trying to be like, how can we push VR forward? We started with Wilson and now to this. I think that's a pretty nice leap. So,
and what is that? Jason, what is it about Twisted Pixel that got you interested in their talent set? And why are they now making their sophomore effort in VR here?
Extremely creative. Really funny.
It helps.
Deeply funny. Not funny stupid, but like the funny stuff. They have the funny stupid.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Just
some
to
of that.
Be clear.
There's just the way Josh
a lot
is sitting
of
here.
Stuff, like, yeah. You play it. You
games
play
of the people.
Like
what are we talking
a second
about?
Or third time, and you realize there's actually some pretty deep layers of humor in there.
Yeah.
We're all exploring VR still. Like, we don't know all of the things you can do with VR by far. And they have come up with some pretty interesting revolutionary ways of dealing with VR. And you're not being fair to yourself with Defector. Defector is an over-the-top action movie where you're doing the things that an over-top action hero would do. You're doing them.
Yeah.
So all the jumping from one plane to another plane, grabbing onto the side of the plane, climbing up the plane. If you ever wanted to know what it felt like to be Tom Cruise at his best in a Mission Impossible, that's the game they're making with a massive dose of humor. So it's amazing what they've come up with. I'm always amazed.
Yeah, I know it's cliche, but we are really trying to do stuff that does not translate on a flat screen like a TV, so that people say, okay, well, I really do need to see what this is about, climbing this plane or skydiving from plane to plane or driving a car out of the back of a plane. Like, that's just completely different sitting on a couch, with the controller.
Right.
And so that's just we're just trying to find those like cool scenarios that wouldn't be possible.
And optionality. I mean, I don't think I'm going out of what I'm allowed to say because it's been in the trailer, but there are moments where things branch and you could jump out of a plane and try to catch onto another plane that's passing, or drive a car out the back of a plane and try to do something totally different as an escape. And again, it's like being an action hero, right? What's your crazy over the top way of getting out of this scenario?
Yeah.
And only VR can really put you in there. Everything you do in games, it's amazing. It's beautiful. I built them for years, but you're always seeing it through a window. You're always looking at someone else doing it, no matter what happens. Even if it's a first person game, it's not you. It's the arms coming around the side. I'm looking at a TV. Coming around the side of a TV and your legs pop up in front of you. First, it's amazing that they can get first person shooters to make you feel like you're falling out of a helicopter.
Right.
But you never really feel like you're falling out of a helicopter. It's different in VR.
Yeah.
You feel like you're falling out of that
Imagine
helicopter.
Answering trivia questions from Jackbox as exactly. you're falling out of an helicopter.
This yes. this Royal Rumble here is going to turn into
a great idea. Now I know why we're all here together. This is brilliant.
In the middle of
brilliant.
An action scene, it's going to stop and say something like, you know, who was the third country to invade Russia in the winter and not succeed? You know, it's like, let's get it all together.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect. Jackbox, do you guys have any interest in VR? Is that just a whole other world that's like, man, we'd have to ramp up in some weird ways?
Yeah. I don't know that it fits what we do right now.
Come on, guys. Yeah. Come on.
But, I mean, like, do we have interest? Absolutely. I mean, we have rigs at the office. Personally, I own an Oculus. Like, absolutely. It's awesome technology. The stuff that's being done is amazing and groundbreaking. But for us to do game shows, trivia, party games in that environment... So it's
hard. It's
a little different, and I'm not sure it's the perfect execution of it.
When are you guys going to do the Running Man?
Sure.
With trivia.
Sure.
And then when you fail, right. really well, crazy.
We have a battle royale trivia that we're working on right now, where the window closes in, people die. It's amazing. Cool. Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of curious about, like, you know, group efforts in VR, like, because what we do is we create an environment for people to laugh together. You know, that's a big part of it, and it's a party. And it was actually our charter a few years ago before we created Fibbage, was that we kind of focused on just being a party game company. And, you know, I've seen a couple of things out there for VR and, like, group discovery. Like, there was, like, a murder game, a VR game that seemed kind of interesting where people from different parts of the country could play murder in a VR setting. Like, that's mm-hmm. really kind of interesting to me. But mostly, our games are about us people on a couch drawing dicks.
Yeah. Besides the drawing dicks, step back off that for a second. Right now, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of people in VR chat doing nothing but walking around, being goofy with each other, and being social.
Yeah.
We believe in the long run that VR is a social medium and that people are going to be in it together. How you make that work with trivia is why we need brilliant people like you working in VR. I can't answer that question, but I can tell you there are certain things about being in VR with other people that are not like being in person. It never will be, but as close as you'll ever get if you're not in person. And you could make a game show where people are standing next to each other competing.
Right.
One's in Phoenix, one's in Shanghai, one's somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And they will feel like they're standing next to each other on stage in front of a virtual audience.
Right.
It's going to happen.
Sure.
Like, this stuff is all going to happen.
Sure.
You know, actually, it's funny that you say that because I worked on the first You Don't Know Jack in 1995. Jeez. And I was the art director for that. And Wes Boyd, who is the president and CEO of Berkeley Systems, basically said the exact same thing to me. It was like, one day people would be playing this in a virtual environment and they will be in different places around the world. Exactly. Like, who are you?
And the thing is, that is happening right now. Like, we have a game called From Other Suns, which has drop in, drop out space exploration. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I really like doing is dropping into VR in these multiplayer games and talking to people about their experience with their Rift or, you know, with their Oculus Go or whatever they're using. And I started talking to some guy on this spaceship. The game works that if you stop kind of moving forward, it'll just stop and let you talk, which is great.
Right.
And we just started chatting and he's like, oh, you work at Oculus? That's amazing. I'm thinking about getting into, here's my background. He came from the military and he had a security background. I'm like, well, man, I work at Facebook. Oculus, sure, but we need your help with the following. And we ended up talking for about a half an hour with, you know, these fake guns in our hand, waving them around, like hand motions. So if you come to Facebook, what you're going to do with these giant, you know, goofy space guns, completely forgot about what was going on. I ended up getting him to, I don't know if he got the job, to be honest with you, but he was in Maryland. I was in San Francisco Bay Area.
Right.
And we were talking like two people anywhere else you'd be. And someone else dropped in. He comes up, hey, what's going on? Hey, he works at Oculus. Really? You work at I want to get into games. I'm like, come on, let's go on a raid. You can just get lost in the social.
Right.
And the game just disappears. And that would never happen in most multiplayer games on a 2D screen. You don't feel the...
Right.
Yeah.
Reminds me of those interviews with Red versus Blue. Like those old, like, there's like, you know, people are getting shot and whatnot, and, but there's an interview going on.
Well, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I know for us, a little bit different, but you know, we're making our console games for years and years and years, and they're all different, and it's fun, and I love it. I love it so much. When we did Wilson, that was the first time in a long time, just as artists, developers, designers, that it was really like, oh my God, what the hell are we doing? Like, how do we, you know, we had some of the first pairs of touch to work with, mm-hmm. and they were amazing. We're like, how do we, because there's so many new things you have to think about when you're going to try to make, you know, what I consider like the console experience in VR or whatever. So I will say, just from a developer standpoint, it's been extremely interesting and challenging and sometimes frustrating, but in a good way, to try to figure out that stuff. And then when you do kind of solve some things as baby steps and you get a little further, and it's actually really rewarding to be able to do that.
You've all been developers for a long time, and every so often you take a gigantic step back in the industry and have to relearn. Mm-hmm. Going from 2D games to 3D games, you know, going from the Mario and Sonic era into the Crash Bandicoot Mario 64 era, we had to relearn everything about character action games because nothing translated directly across.
Right.
Right. And I feel like since Crash, we've been on a amazing journey of better and better and better, but it's been an incremental journey. And everybody that's working in VR is taking a giant step back again because nothing translates across right. literally. And we're just kind of slowly regaining. And there are developers that hate that, right? It's like filmmakers that are rejecting 360 film because it's not what they grew up on. Spielberg, famous right. for saying, this is dangerous. Not dangerous like it's going to hurt someone. Dangerous because you take the control away from the director. Right. Young directors are like, I'm going to figure this out.
Totally.
Right? And same thing in the game industry. Their developers are like, I don't want to deal with relearning things. Most of the developers I deal with are like, it makes me feel young again. This makes me feel like I did when I was just cutting my teeth learning how to develop games. And it's extremely exciting.
I love the idea of Jason, you going around E3, like pitching developers on the Fountain of Youth. Like, hey, Alan, you want to feel like you did back in the well, first day? You know, Jack, come on, man. Come over to VR. Here we
what's
go.
The trade-off?
I wonder.
I'm curious.
When I
need some more. I need it now.
I'm VR curious now.
I wonder when I started in 85, how many 50-year-old developers there were. There was probably...
You were 50 back in 1985. You look great.
Wasn't 50 tonight. But we're in now a world where we are older developers, yeah. right? We've gotten older. And it feels nice to be back inexperienced, not know what to do, experimentation, trial and error, success. That's the foundation of the game business.
Yeah, I think one thing that was really remarkable when we, you know, first hooked up with you guys in 2015, you were very open that you didn't have all the answers to things, right? You're like, okay, we have, you know, a handful of devs that are working on this issue. Here's some general guidelines, but feel free to break them. You know, and that was like verbatim coming out of your mouth. Like, hey, you know, here's some success we've had with this mechanic, you know, or this, you know, use of touch. But, you know, feel free to experiment, and the rules are almost there to be broken.
A lot of the rules that we would have put down on paper, because there were people at Oculus that were like, here are the rules. No developer can do this. No developer can do that. These are the rules that make VR good. All of those rules have been broken successfully since we started. If we had actually gone out and made those rules, we'd be in a much worse place in VR right now.
Yeah, totally. Right. And I'm so jealous of your spot, Jason, because it's so cool to be in this industry for so long, know exactly which developers you look up to, which you think are extremely talented. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'd imagine you have a dump truck of money and you get to choose which developers to try and persuade to come over to the VR side and then just load them full of cash. Is that how it works?
Well, first of all, I have respect for Joseph.
No.
Josh, come on, man.
Capcom and everybody said no, truck, so it's like, Twisted Pixel.
Where is this? Yeah, the dump truck. You know. We have that visit.
I have respect for every developer, no matter what the scale, because it's a weird combination of art and business.
Yeah.
It is a lonely business. Unlike film, where you're often doing it with a lot of people, small developers start small, often in basements, often in garages. I've been there.
Yeah.
So I have a huge amount of respect, regardless of the size of the developer, for even the gumption to try to make a game, because the success to failure ratio is so high. As to the dump truck of money, I wouldn't say it's a dump truck. Facebook has been very forward thinking with its investment. Mark and the rest of the senior leadership believe in VR. You hear that from him every time we we have an OC or every time he's on stage at F8. And it has allowed us to push the industry farther, faster than I think if we didn't have, wouldn't call it a dump truck, but significant financial backing.
For sure. And God, you're in such a cool spot too, just to think back in your history and then think of, let's see, I worked with a 4A, like the Metro team, back with THQ a little bit. I know they're talented as hell. They have the heart. Let's reach out to them to see if they're interested.
Totally.
Like just that, have to have that internal Rolodex and just call those people up. That's the coolest spot in the industry.
Well, and one of my goals in life has always been to treat everybody I've worked with, not only in the industry, but outside the industry, but especially in the industry, extremely well. So even a THQ going into bankruptcy that I joined, and some of the most hellacious moments for people when they're losing their job, losing their healthcare, losing whatever they're losing, I tried my best to do right by all of the teams and all the people at THQ.
Yeah.
And many of them are now working on VR projects because of that.
Totally.
So
yeah,
you can get ahead by being nice in this world.
Yeah, it works out, everybody. I want to know what Jackbox's E3 is like. What are you guys doing? Are you taking meetings? Are you trying to get this thing on even more platforms? I don't know if it's possible.
You can announce your own platform.
Yeah.
What other platforms?
For, Engage?
No.
Yeah, versions.
I'd buy that one.
I can't get carts manufactured in time, unfortunately. yeah, it's mostly meetings. A lot of developer relations stuff, talking to all the platforms that we currently work with and launch our games on.
What else is there to talk about? I'm very naive, but like, they're doing well. They're on all those platforms. It's great. What do those meetings entail?
Well, we're on this kind of annual cycle of another Jackbox Party Pack each year. And so a lot of it is, hey, here's where we're at in the development cycle. What kind of support can we get when we launch? What kind of featured placement can we get in the store? What kind of sales are coming up to get involved with? Any new offerings that exist, like Game Pass or things like that? How does it make sense for us? Talking through those things. The other stuff that we're doing is taking our games and looking at big sports, esports, and kind of big venues where,
really?
Yeah, where thousands of people are kind of, you know, gathered together.
You know, we're the new hot dog and, you know, donut chasing each other.
Okay, is that how it works?
Well, it could be, right? In a sports stadium, you're at a baseball game or a basketball game, and there's a big jumbotron. Everybody's got a phone. Why can't you take out your phone and join the game and play, right?
Do you think you ever run out of Jack puns? Because I'm just sitting here thinking of all the puns you can make with "you don't know Jack," and some of them are not fit for this.
Right, right, sure.
But it's endless.
True.
The problem with your games, as far as I can see it, the only problem with Jackbox Party Pack games is I spend too much of my time trying to stop the party when I have friends over and saying, we need to appreciate how well written that is. No one else in the world can move up with that prompt. They're so good.
God bless you. Yeah, our writers are probably thrilled to hear that.
Unbelievably funny.
Yeah, thanks.
And that's a great part about being in Chicago, because in Chicago, there's some of the most talented and funny people in the Midwest that all sort of congregate around I.O. and Second City, and, you know, they work for us all.
Is that right? Because they don't want to move? You just get like those locals, and it's like they always have a chip on their shoulder, like, we're going to stick it to those Californians over there.
No, I mean, some people do move to California, and many of them have, but there's definitely a community in Chicago that we've been lucky enough to.
Yeah, and it's constantly growing and recycling new people, trying to make it big in the comedy scene.
Yeah.
And they're great writers for us.
Yeah. They're amazing.
I'd imagine.
I mean, I worked at Disney for 5 years, and it was great. I had great budgets. I was able to work with some of the most talented animators. But when I got an offer to come back and work with Jellyvision, I was like, well, I like to design for funny people. I like to design for smart people. And it was a total no-brainer to actually just come and work with these guys that made me laugh like nobody else has.
Here's a strange question for you guys. So just for an anecdote here, we're in a bar recently, and we decided, like, hey, let's play Quiplash 2 on the big screen of this bar. This will be a hoot. Always the best time ever with my friends. Went up there, just immediately the worst answers you can imagine. I love a good dick drawing, love a good dick joke, but we're talking like just bottom of the barrel internet crap. I'm not talking even comedic level, just like offensive stuff.
Like racist stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How much do you guys worry about that? Of like, when you're building a prompt, and you have to think about every party across the nation and how there might be one racially insensitive person at that party.
Fascist parties.
Right. We don't we don't celebrate and condone that behavior, but it will happen. And if it happens in the privacy of your home, it's different than it happening in a bar or a public venue, right?
Or at a sports arena.
Or a sports arena.
So how do you deal with that?
Well, so some of the titles that we're looking to place in those environments are less user-generated content, right? So a game like Gespionage, which is in our pack, that doesn't involve user-generated content. You just, you know, pick your percentage, you bet and vote and that kind of thing, and then the result is shown and you're on a leaderboard. So it's a similar kind of groupthink. Thousands of people can play simultaneously, but we don't have to worry about a dick drawing showing up or some horribly offensive prompt being, entered into the game.
Everybody
can
choose 69% over and over again.
Well, and they will, but that's less offensive, I guess. I don't know.
In the public arena like that.
You know, as you would expect, we have a ton of people that stream our games on Twitch, and that's been a huge vehicle for spreading awareness about our games, and we've done a ton of server changes on the back end to support thousands and thousands of people in any single game. So right now, 10,000 people can join a single game. So if a streamer goes live, their entire audience can join the game and play. And so that lends itself to expanding into bigger venues, but what it also does is bring the worst in people out.
Totally.
If there's anonymity and if there's no way to kick them, and
it's funny, the word Jew. I'm gonna write this 1,000.
Yeah. So we have added a whole bunch of features. We've added a VIP mode, and you can go in and censor people or kick people.
Yeah.
We've added the requirement if you want to enable Twitch login, so people aren't anonymous in your game. So if they do something bad, you can actually ban them from your channel as well.
Yeah.
So we tried to combat a lot of those things, but again, you can't stop everything. So we want to just be more conscious of it in a public venue or a setting like that than in your home. In your home, you want to be horrible? Close the door. Don't broadcast it. Be horrible, I guess.
And and if you tweet it, we'll see it and we'll take it down.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
I'd imagine there's some interesting debates about free speech within Jackbox.
Well, we did toy with the idea of having filters, but people will just break filters. They'll come up with a different way of saying a horrible thing. We also were like, why? Because some of the stuff that would be offensive to one person would be funny to us, it's all kind of relative. So, but there is terrible things that people have said.
Now, we do have a game called TKO where you can draw terrible t-shirts that go up and battle each other.
Yeah.
And if you played it, it's a hoot. It's quite a bit of fun. And you can imagine some horrible t-shirt designs come out of those. And we added the feature where you can go in and buy that shirt at the end of the game. And we have sold a ridiculous amount of t-shirts. We didn't expect we would, but we've done great on t-shirt sales as well. But the nice thing is the fulfillment supplier, the people that do the t-shirt fulfillment, do another kind of pass. On,
right.
We're not going to print this.
Really?
Yeah. And they one of the funniest moments ever in Jackbox is when this vendor sent us this lengthy email basically describing the criteria with which they use to filter.
Oh,
and just the most horrible stuff in here and all grammatically parsed. It's okay to say Johnny did this to Susie, but it's not okay to say Johnny, just horrible stuff.
The rules.
But internally this circulated. It was the most hilarious email ever. And thank God you're doing this, because we don't have to do it now. That's great. Yeah.
Speaking of funny, Josh, I remember years ago, I went to your office in Austin there. And it has
been a long time, man. It's 5 or 6 years ago or something, right?
It was
an
absurd amount of time. It was when you guys were maybe months away from shipping Misplosion Man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was such a fun vibe in that studio for the few hours that we spent there. It was probably not even an hour, actually.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
No, it was just wonderful because I feel like you guys were getting ready to move. Is that right?
We were about ready to. That's right. Yeah, okay. We were in the old office and we had found a bigger place that felt more like, instead of mom's basement, it was maybe a real business, So that was nice to feel like a real business.
Yeah. But if we went in there and we saw, you showed us all the cutscenes from Misplosion Man. And also, I don't think I'd seen it before then. It was the first time you showed the beard engine prompt.
The videos, yeah.
Yeah. They're so good. And you guys, it seemed to revel in we're really spending Microsoft's money in a very stupid way here.
Well, so that one was before Microsoft.
Oh, was it? Okay.
That was before Microsoft's money. And there were a couple intro videos I couldn't really show anymore once we got owned by Microsoft. not in the sense that I think they would offend anyone, just people who didn't get
it. In line with their brand.
In line with their brand. That's a great way to put it.
You still made Wavy 2, man. You're allowed to be as strange as you could possibly want to be. Which, by the way, we just played last year during Extra Life.
Did you really?
Oh, that's great.
Oh, that's cool.
And, like, I was the big champion because I think it's amazing. And so many people watching the stream and in the office had never seen it before. Just blown away. Like, this. How did I never see this when it came out? It's so effing stupid and fun.
Yeah, we had a good time with that, man. That was just free DLC we did.
Yeah.
That was Bill and I dipping into filmmaking. We literally did that in 2.5 or 3 days.
We had no idea on location. Yeah,
it's all live action.
Texas, summer.
And you could use Kinect. It was like, do you guys remember Mad Dog McCree?
Oh, yeah.
It was literally our version of Mad Dog McCree. And it was
where people are like doing Hadoukens and stuff, and it just gets crazy.
That's so stupid. Okay,
that's so great.
Way of the Warrior.
Ooh.
American Laser Games, the creator of Mad Dog McCree, bought the rights to Way of the Warrior Arcade.
What?
Wow. And then went bankrupt.
Why have we never? Why have we never spoken about this?
Is that where they're going to put the 3DOs in the cabinets?
They put 3DOs in the cabinets.
I think I remember reading about that.
And they had this Mad Dog McCree thing going on, and they were like, "We need to expand beyond the video arcade games." So they put 3DOs inside arcade cabinets, and they went after Way of the Warrior, and they paid us, and then promptly went bankrupt.
Oh, man.
Once I think I know everything about Way of the Warrior,
yeah.
a new awesome treasure happens.
We were talking about it earlier.
We'll just spend all night talking about Way of the Warrior.
Every 6 months, it'll peel back a few more layers, like just teasing it out.
Yeah. Well, Jason just knows everything about this industry. Like, what's been your greatest geek out moment working with Mr. Rubin over here?
Way of the Warrior, man. I think it's the first thing we told him when we met him. Like, dude,
and
you made Way of the Warrior
characters. So just to be clear, he may not have been Sub-Zero, but I was the ninja and Konotori.
Oh, only the finest.
And the voice of the announcer too.
I mean, besides loving the digitized fighters, I mean, I love the idea that it's two guys doing whatever it takes
in an apartment.
And I remember
$86,000 the entire budget of that game.
Oh my god.
That's dedication, man. That's you love games.
You have to impute the lost time, but $86,000.
We have in the Informer office, I hope we've shown you, but we're digging through our archives not too long ago, and we have like a raw disc that you sent with like hand-drawn on the cover with your address in Boston and stuff. It's just awesome to see. Like, hey, there's a Naughty Dog production,
crazy
everybody.
Time.
That's awesome.
I mean, and that is the beauty of the video game industry, is two people sitting in a basement or wherever they are and spitting out something that ends up, you're laughing about, that was what, 93?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So 25 years later.
Man, so
25th anniversary, Way of the Warrior.
You hear it here first.
It's a gold edition. Bring it back.
Remastered
for sure.
We'd sell a full 10 copies.
4K remaster.
6 months to get this out.
I feel like Vicarious could spin something out of that, though.
They probably could.
They could hit that marketing hard.
And you're saying 4K remaster. The digital scan of the characters are probably 50 pixels tall.
4K remaster. It needs it,
man. Blow it up.
It needs it.
Totally redraw it.
You know, that's just called a zoom.
Getting back in the ninja suit. Did it once. Yeah. We're done. We are done.
Are there any other Naughty Dog lost games along the way that could ever see the light of day in any form here?
Jack. I mean,
what?
Jack and Dax.
I mean, like unreleased stuff, though.
Yeah,
like,
No. Okay. We released everything we did. We finished every game. We never had a game canceled, to my memory. And we released everything. Like, so it's all out there.
That's wild.
But I mean, my Twitter feed, the Jack and Please Remake Jack. I'm like, I can't. I don't own the IP.
Would you want to see it? Would it be a little bit of a wince if you saw the new art?
No. I didn't wince at all seeing Crash. I thought that was a good idea, and I thought they did a great job of it. I mean, I saw it before it came out. Like, I took a look at it, and I was like, wow, this is awesome.
They sent it to you for approval or just out of curiosity?
Sony actually came, set up a PlayStation, because where I was, there wasn't a PlayStation. Lots of VR, not a lot of PlayStations.
Right.
No problem with PlayStation, but they came and we took a look at it. Some of the early levels that they had done, and it's awesome.
You gave it a thumbs up?
Totally give it a
thumbs
up.
Did you feel a little bit like George Lucas there, being like, I like Last Jedi?
Not quite like George Lucas, but...
I think what I don't understand,
Jar Jar,
though, is...
There's no Jar Jar in the remake, exactly. Like, we managed to keep the originals. Like, there was a period, Crash was kind of like doing great, and kind of went through this period that we like to ignore and forget. And there were some of those games that you guys could drag out of that library out there and just really embarrass Crash. And then Crash kind of is like... you know, he's coming. He went to rehab.
It's a renaissance.
Yeah. And he's like, he's back in the straight and narrow now, and everybody's loving it.
I saw him on the show floor today. It was great.
Totally.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. He's walking around.
It's nuts. I mean, you know, for various VR purposes, I was looking at the biggest IP in history of video games. And by the way, the list I was looking at was biggest unit sales. So, you know, something like Fortnite, for example, wouldn't show up because it's new and it's digitally distributed and stuff. But Crash is right up there at the, you know, 50 million units plus. Wow. Not a lot of titles that have sold more than 50 million units. And I think Naughty Dog did probably four of, I don't know, 20 plus games. And that's the vast majority of the sales. Which is also interesting to me.
Yeah, for sure. All right, seriously though, hand to God, and I'm going to make you put your hand up to God here. So if they made a new Crash, if Vicarious Visions started making a new Crash, would you play it through to completion?
Well, I can punt on this one because the number of things I have time to play through to completion I have a five-year-old daughter. I commute back and forth between LA and San Francisco and Oculus.
It's driving the dump truck of money around.
Here's what I would say.
I would start it, and
whether I finished it would depend on how well it played.
That's awesome. Josh, favorite E3 memory? We got to honor E3 here now that we're here. Do you have, going back through history, like how many shows have you been to now?
Oh man, a lot. I don't know what the exact number is.
Were you in Atlanta?
I was not in Atlanta.
I was in Atlanta. Okay. That was great.
There you go. That dates you, right? Because there were two of those.
Yeah, and I went to the first one because the year before.
Oh, wow.
That was a mess.
Yeah.
Atlanta
was not ready for E3 back then.
No,
right? We like broke the city basically. Now Atlanta's great. Atlanta can handle it.
I love Atlanta though, because we went out to some seriously great parties.
And the steakhouses. I remember the steakhouses from those trips. Food and then before that, it was CES.
Right.
Because there was no E3.
Right.
Okay. Favorite memory.
Yeah. What do you got?
I shouldn't say this.
No, please.
I was with Mr. Bill here. I just started Twisted Pixel with a couple partners. And,
will this be also my favorite memory, or is this looking good?
Might be a memory you don't remember. I don't know. This was when E3, they still had the huge, you guys remember, like the Sony party and the Nintendo party, like massive. And I don't know how you did it. I think you told me not to ask, but you're like, hey, I got you into the Sony party. And I was a nobody. I was like, dude, what's the Sony party? And you literally get on this like little train. And they drive you up this hill and
what?
Overlooking the Hollywood Bowl. Yeah.
You get out and they have like champagne. They're like, welcome to the Sony party. And you go in and I'm like, oh my God, I'm not important enough to be here. And I'm walking around like all these important guys are there. And I'm like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here. But I just immediately went to the buffet because it was all free. And I was super poor because I just started the company. So I'm just like eating as much as I can. And I can't even remember his name, but the head of Sony at the time.
It was Phil Harrison.
That's right.
I remember this.
My partner comes up, hey, Josh, like you meet Phil Harrison. I have a huge piece of roast beef in my mouth. I'd like make a deal. You know, I have no idea what I'm talking about. Like trying to get a deal with Sony.
We didn't get a deal with Sony.
I don't understand why.
But got the roast beef.
Mm-hmm. Roast beef with Fantastic. And there was supposed to be a band that played. It was really cool because I'm from Southern Indiana. And I, you know, it's always been my dream to do games. So I went to Chicago to work for a couple of years to be at E3 on the magical roast beef train. That's like, it's like, you know what? I made it.
Really
I made it. I'm here. Yeah.
That's a good game.
It's my,
you should make the game, the magical roast beef train.
Crank out 5 a year. You guys make it.
All right. Yeah. All right.
I think we could team up on this.
Yeah. The crossover.
Trademark that already or.
Jason, after so many years at E3, do you have a number one memory, number one geek out session?
I do. It's pretty easy for me. And there's been some great moments at E3, but, you know, there's no reason to believe that two kids that had put out Way of the Warrior beforehand, and that may have been our peak, were going to make a mascot character for Sony.
Right.
And Andy and I just said, we're going to do this. And Universal backed us, and they were dumb to do so. And we worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. And Sony was unaware of it for reasons that are too long to go into. But they came down and looked when we went alpha, which was, I think, probably a month or two, maybe 3 months before E3. And they'd never seen Crash. And coincidentally, Mario 64 had just been shown publicly for the first time in screenshots and stuff. And they had no character action game. and they realized they needed a character action game. So almost overnight, we became part of Sony's launch lineup.
Oh my God.
I think it was Twisted Metal got kicked out of their front primary spot. Wow. Sorry to the developers. And they put Crash Bandicoot right in this front spot. And there's pictures of this on the internet. And across from us was this little unknown character called Mario and Mario 64.
Yeah.
And this was the beginning of 3D character action gaming. And the show opened and I'm standing next to my game and people are playing it. Like a lot of people. Yeah. And that hadn't happened like that before. I'd been to trade shows, but a lot of people, lines. And this guy walks up and I'm like, he looks really familiar. And it's Miyamoto.
Oh my God.
And he plays for a long time. And there's pictures of Mark Cerny, who was, you know, heavily involved in the Crash Bandicoot series. He was our executive producer, but really involved. And Andy and Miyamoto. I didn't get in a photo. I don't know how. But that moment watching the legend play my game, and you could see in his eyes.
Fear.
Like, this is going to be trouble.
Ooh, yeah. Good. Wow.
You know, like, this is not a crappy game, because most games compared to Mario games, not that most games are crappy, but compared to Mario games, most games are crappy.
Totally.
And it looked really good, and they were sparse. We were dense. If you look at the history, I think Mario 64 was on the right path to character action free roaming, and we were kind of halfway there and still trying to hold on to tracks. But in that moment, you could see that Miyamoto was like, wow, this is not a joke.
Yeah.
And sure enough, we outsold Mario 64.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Congratulations.
I mean, part of that was PlayStation did better than Nintendo and everything. But, you know, at that moment, Miyamoto playing my game.
That's absolutely amazing.
Everything else pales.
It's awesome.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, everything else pales on this podcast compared to that. Thank you so much for everybody coming by the Game Informer show. I greatly appreciate your effort, and your games are all wonderful. Looking forward to seeing what you guys push out in the future. Jackbox Party Pack 5 is coming out when?
October-ish.
Fantastic. The game's coming out when?
Later this year.
Later
this year.
All right. Or else.
It's coming out.
No more dump truck of money for you.
Exactly. The dump truck shuts and we send in the guys with the bats. Yeah.
Everybody, thank you so much for watching and listening to this episode of the Game Informer Show podcast. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. We'll have another episode just like this. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye-bye.